The title of my presentation is OSHA Regulations for Cotton Gins, but I'm going to cover more about what do you do if OSHA shows up? How do the regulations affect you, and how do you react? What are the things you want to do, and what are the things you don't want to do when OSHA shows up at your gin? And a couple of disclaimers real quick. First of all, if you're not in Texas, you need to know if your state is a state plan state or a federal plan state. If you've got a state OSHA, some of the stuff I'm going to tell you may be a little bit different in your state. So just know which way you're covered. Also, another thing that's important to understand is I'm going to talk about how these regulations affect cotton gins, but you need to understand that the warehouses and grain elevators are covered under some different rules. So some of the things I'm telling you are very specific to cotton gins, so know the differences in these things. Okay, with that said, there's kind of three discrete areas that OSHA covers. We've got safety regulations, and we're pretty familiar with most of those. That's your machinery guarding, your electrical safety, lockout, tagout, those kind of things. But then there's a whole second set of health regulations, and these are what we've been seeing OSHA pushing on a little bit harder. For example, there's a noise standard. There's also a cotton dust standard. The noise standard doesn't apply to cotton gins. The cotton dust standard doesn't apply to cotton gins. So it's important to understand how these things work. There's also the record keeping reporting. We've talked about OSHA 300 forms. Assuming I have enough time, I'm going to tell you about there's a new accident and injury reporting rule that came out. Actually, it went into effect on the January 1st, so it's been in effect for a couple of days. So those are kind of the three areas that you're going to see OSHA. You see OSHA look at. Okay, so there are really three areas that cotton gins are affected by. Part 1928 is the agricultural standard, and I like to tell people Part 1928 is about that thick. Part 1928 specifically includes cotton gins. If you look at the applicability section, it says this standard applies to farms, farmsteads, and cotton gins. Just to give you an idea of what you run into with OSHA, I think it's important to understand these guys are a federal agency, and y'all dealt with the IRS, right? You know a little bit about the IRS. You can't just walk into the store, grab some forms, and fill out your taxes without knowing what you're doing. A lot of it doesn't make a lot of sense. It's a little counterintuitive, and the OSHA regulations are very much that way. When you go through this process, there's a lot of things that you would think, well, that's obvious. It may not be to them. Good example, we had a gin cited. Forklifts were something that they were kind of big on last year or year before, and we had two forklift citations, and one of them was cited under 1910 for not following the forklift standards. And so we go into the meeting with the OSHA administrator, and I said, look, you know, first of all, cotton gins are covered under 1928, so you really can't cite them under 1910. She looked at me and she said, that's stupid. 1928 is stupid, and you're stupid for wanting to be covered under 1928. This isn't the inspector. This is the boss. And I said, well, you know, 1928 may be stupid. I don't know. I didn't write it. It's kind of y'all's standard, not mine. But if you look at the applicability section, it says this covers cotton gin. So, you know, just me, but I think we're covered by this because it says we are. But that's kind of the kind of thing that you will get into when you deal with these guys. So there's 1910 standards that cover general industry. Some of them do apply to cotton gins. Most of them don't. Most of the time, you have to be covered under 1928. There's also a general duty clause. The general duty clause is not in the OSHA regulations. It's in the law. And it says that an employer is required to provide to an employee a workplace that's free from recognized hazards. If they can't find any other way to cite you, they'll hit you under the general duty clause. Okay, so the way this thing works, and again, it's a little counterintuitive on how it works, but the first thing that happens, you know you've got fun when the OSHA inspector shows up, throws his little badge on the counter and says, I'm going to do an inspection. You need to do a little thinking about what are you going to do if that guy shows up, because a little planning ahead of time will get you a long ways. There's a couple of things that you need to understand. First of all, an inspection is very much a fact-gathering exercise, okay? The inspector does not write the citations. The inspector gathers a whole bunch of data up, and they give it to that area administrator. The area administrator writes the violations. So the inspector really doesn't know what they're going to do. He just gathers the information, gives it to them. If they show up, throwing them out is kind of a bad idea. We've had a couple of guys try it. It'll work for a little while, but it's not really going to help in the long run. Not in a cotton gin, but in another industry, we had an employee just say, this is a bunch of, you know what, and I don't want to talk to you anymore. The employee walked out. Now what do you do? Well, they subpoenaed him. And he had to show up at the OSHA office at 2:30 on Tuesday the 25th or whatever, or face court. So they have a little power, and you really don't want to just slough them off. But you also don't want to give them a tour. You know, you ask them, what would you like to see? You show them what they want to see. Follow them around. Be as helpful as you can, but don't volunteer extra information. Stick with what they're asking you to inspect. You also want to be real careful and watch what they take pictures of. Make notes when they make notes. Take pictures where they make take pictures. Because what's going to happen is when you get that violation, you're going to be in a meeting with the administrator, and she's going to throw a picture down and say, now you need to guard this. And it's going to be a pulley. And I'll promise you, they show you a picture of a pulley in your gin, and you're going to know which pulley it is? No. I've been in plenty of these meetings, and every time the general looks and goes, dang, that could be the number 1A lint cleaner. You know, that might be the 2B. So you need to pay real close attention, because they do it on purpose. They try to take pictures that you can't tell, because they're hoping you'll find five of those in your gin and fix them all. That's how they play the game. So go with them. Make sure you're as helpful as you can be, but not offering anything extra. The other thing is, don't be afraid to get some help while they're there. I couldn't tell you how many OSHA inspectors have actually called me while they're at the gin and said, all right, I'm so-and-so, I'm at this gin, you know, and that's a perfectly fine thing. Just tell them to call me, or tell them to call your association people wherever, in whatever association you're in, because we may be able to help walk them through some of these things and explain some stuff and maybe head off a few problems before they ever show up. And you do want to make sure your janitor, your superintendent, your office manager, those kind of people, they know what you expect them to do when they show up. Because if you're off getting parts and the OSHA inspector shows up, there's nothing wrong with them saying, hey, the manager's gone, let me call him. They call you. You say, I'll be back in 2 hours. You tell them to come back in 2 hours. I mean, don't tell them to come back in 2 months. That's probably not going to work too well. But they do understand that, you know, if you're not there, you're not there. And you can work with them a little bit. The other thing you want to be very aware of, and this is, used to not see this so much, but we're starting to see it more and more, is you'll have two inspections. And it's two different people, and it may be at the same time, and it may not. You'll have a safety inspection, and you'll have a health inspection. The last two inspections that we've gone through in Texas, we had the safety inspections, and then we had the health inspections. What they were looking at this time is they were strapping noise monitors on all of our guys and taking noise readings. And we have gotten violations now for the noise, for having too much noise in the gin. And that's where, again, we get into some of these issues, and I'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. So the inspector takes the inspector takes this information. They go back to their area administrator, they hand in their homework, and then at some point in the time after that, and it may be the next week, and it may be 3 months later, that area administrator is going to send you a violation. You will get one, and it will have money attached to it. That's a given. I think OSHA has a mandate to get their gas money back at a minimum. So you will absolutely get a citation. When you get that citation, that's when all the time clocks start. And so the minute you get that in the mail, that's when you start reacting. And again, especially if you've had two inspectors there, you're likely that you're going to get two citations. They did this to us in South Texas this year. They sent us this violation, and we looked at it and said, well, that wasn't too bad. You know, it's a couple of things and not much money, and we're looking at it. We're getting ready to try to settle this thing. And then it dawned on me. I said, wait a minute, there's no health violations in here. Didn't you have a health inspector taking noise readings? She said, yeah. And so we got their attorney to call OSHA and say, hey, is that all? Are we, oh no, well, yeah, you're fixing to get some more. They were holding the second one, and what they were trying to do is get us to settle the first one and then hit you with the second one. And so you got to be real careful that you've got everything in hand and you know exactly what you're doing. And this is the point at which you absolutely do not want to do it by yourself. Just don't do it. Get those violations into the hands of people who've seen them. Some of us have seen an awful lot of them, and we kind of know what we're looking for. So you do want to do that. The other thing is, don't ever assume it's accurate. You want them to go through every violation. And a good example is the forklift violations. They had cited this guy for about 10 different sections of the forklift standard. None of them applied to us. And we were able to get 8 out of the 10 of them knocked out because they just didn't apply to us. And they tried this on purpose. We had actually had 2 inspections that time too, and they were holding the violations on the second gen till we resolved the first one. Well, we got all those forklift violations knocked out, and the second violation was nearly nothing. If we had agreed to them on the first one, I guarantee you that second gen would have gotten a whole bunch of forklift violations, because once you agree to them at one gen, now they got you on the second one. So knowing what that violation looks like is really important. The other thing is that once you get that violation, you've got 15 days to ask for an informal enforcement conference. What that means is you're going to walk into the office at the OSHA, the local OSHA office, and you're going to say, all right, let's look at this. And you say, number one really doesn't apply to us. You know, number two is a good point. We fixed it. We fixed it the day you left. Here's pictures. You know, it's a conference where you can go through that violation with them. You just want to assume that you're going to go there. That is almost a given, unless the... Well, I don't know that we've ever had one that we didn't. Well, one, but it's very, very rare. So you want to make sure that you've got everything in hand and you want to go to that informal enforcement conference. In the past, we were always able to go in there, knock out 2/3 of the violations, agree to a couple of more, and get the fine knocked down to a half and move on. That's generally, we were able to settle it there. In the last 2 years, we found that changing. These guys are not willing to settle it right there. And there's some timelines after that, and we've had them actually go through the conference. They give us an agreement verbally, and then we never get confirmation from them. And if you don't get confirmation from them and the time runs out, you revert back to the original citation. And they held us, and on the last day, we hired a lawyer and had the lawyer formally contest the citation, and boom, we had our settlement the next day. So they play games with their timelines, and I think they do it on purpose. So you've got to be really smart about the way you handle these. I said this, if you don't get it done during that informal, and I've been to a lot of the informal enforcement conferences, just me and the Jenner, we go in there, we get our deal settled, and we move on. If you don't settle it there, and you start running low on your timeline, that's generally where we end up needing a lawyer. And we've had 2 of them this year where we've gotten a lawyer. And one of them, we had it worked out within a day or two. We had to pay the lawyer to write a letter, and that was all it took. The other one has gotten a little stickier. We're actually still in the middle of it, and it's that noise violation. So what they did, and this is kind of a good example of what they'll do. They measured the noise. The noise standard is 85 decibels. Doesn't apply to cotton gins. They measured noise above 85 decibels. They wrote us a violation, and they said, we're not citing you under the noise standard because that doesn't apply, but we are citing you under the general industry standard, which says you didn't provide a safe workplace. And what you need to do to provide a safe workplace is you need to mandate hearing protection. Well, I went to the OSHA website, and you can actually go on the OSHA website, and it has a page that says, if you're an agricultural operation and you measure noise above 85 decibels, what do you do? And it has an answer. The answer on OSHA's website says, if you're an ag operation, you measure noise levels above 85, you should provide hearing protection, and you should encourage your workers to wear it, and you should make them aware that your noise level's above 85. That guy had done all that. And they said, no, you've got to mandate it. That one is still pending. We're going to see how far up you have to go up the chain playing chicken with them and see who wins. So we're still working on that one, but it's a good example of something you don't want to give on, because if we give on it, you know, you guys are probably next. So I see my little yellow lights on. The important thing here, guys, is if you have them come out, know what you're doing during the inspection, Once you get that citation, though, absolutely be sure you get people who know what they're doing to go through that thing with you. Scrub it, make sure you've got everything. The thing is, if you agree to a violation, even if it doesn't apply and you don't eliminate it, they're going to come back and give you a repeat violation later, and that could be really costly. Do I have 2 minutes to do injury and illness? There's three new rulemakings. This is the only one that's really important. It used to be that you had to report any fatality within 8 hours, and you had to report any hospitalization of three or more employees within 8 hours. They've changed it. The fatality is still the same, but now you have to report more types of injuries that are within 24 hours. You've got 24 hours now, but you have to report any work-related hospitalization, any work-related amputation, or any work-related loss of an eye within 24 hours. There's a lot more details on this out there, but you need to understand that this is in effect today. That button. Okay, here's the big deal about this. In the proposed rule, they defined an amputation as any injury that resulted in loss of a bone, piece of a bone, okay? That was the proposed rule. In the final rule, which came out without any public input, they changed the definition of amputation. They just changed it from the 1993 to the 1998. But hey, guess what? The new definition doesn't require loss of a bone. It's the loss of any fingertip, toe tip, any tips of anything, with or without the loss of bone. OSHA, in their proposed rulemaking, they are estimating the year that the data was taken, they received 14 reports under this rule. They're estimating that it's going from 14 reports a year to somewhere around 100,000 reports a year. So they're planning on everybody reporting everything. No word on how in the heck they expect to have the same guy that read the 14 read 100,000, much less do anything with the data. But this is out there. Be aware of it. If you have an injury, understand that these reporting rules are a lot more strict. What are we going to do with all this? I don't know. Obviously, it's a pretty goofy rule when you go from 14 to 100,000. But we're here. Now we've got to deal with it. With that, I'll...